Daniel chapter 8, verse 1 to 14. And then actually Gabriel appears in the second part of the chapter to give the interpretation of the first part of the chapter. And the title is The Little Horn Who Defiles the Sanctuary. And the little horn is obviously the Antichrist. And the sanctuary is obviously the sanctuary in Jerusalem, the Jerusalem temple. We've covered that in our last session. Let's look at Roman numeral 2, paragraph A. Daniel 8 recounts the second of Daniel's four visions that he had towards the end of his life. Because he had a vision early on when he was about 20 years old back in Daniel 2. So there's technically five visions of Daniel recorded in the book, but four of his near the end of his life. Now in this vision, number one, there's three parts. The first part spoke of the Persians. And you understand that ancient Persia is modern day Iran today. So Persian Iran, it's the same geographic area nearly. There's a little bit of boundary shifting around. The second part of the vision was Alexander the Great and the Greeks. The third part of the vision is the most significant part. It's the reason the first two parts are given, so that we would understand the main theme, and that's the wicked reign. It's the context of the wicked reign of the little horn, the Antichrist. So part one and two actually build understanding and context for part three. Now throughout in this vision, there's a man named Antiochus Epiphanes in paragraph 3, right in the middle. Say Antiochus. Antiochus Epiphanes. The reason you want to know that strange name, because any commentaries you read on Daniel 8, they're going to talk about Antiochus Epiphanes. He was a king that was a foreshadow. He fulfilled a little bit of what happened in Daniel 8. And the reason you need to know about Antiochus Epiphanes, because it is a foreshadowing of a far more evil leader at the end of the age. But some scholars want to make Daniel 8 all about Antiochus because they want to get rid of the end time drama and a literal Antichrist. So people would say, well, what do you do with Daniel 8? There is a literal Antichrist. They go, no, it was all fulfilled by Antiochus. And I believe, as many Bible teachers through history believe, that's inadequate answer. That we can't dismiss the Antichrist in Daniel 8 by trying to force the fulfillment of all the details into Antiochus. And again, you only need to know that when you start reading the literature, because you'll run into Antiochus in every one of them, nearly. Okay, paragraph B. I want to mention Gabriel. Because Gabriel, he appears after the first part of the vision. The first part, we're doing verse 1 to 14. Gabriel comes in verse 15, 16 and interprets it. And Gabriel tells, this is Gabriel's first visit in the Bible, in terms of recorded Bible, the biblical record. He appears four times in the scripture. Daniel 8, then again Daniel 9. Next week, and then to John the Baptist's father, and then to Mary to talk about Jesus and the virgin birth. So those are the four appearances of Gabriel. But notice what Gabriel says. He makes it clear that Antiochus, that king about 175 BC, and I got all the dates in the notes. You don't have to get that down right now. But he makes it clear that this vision is for the end of the age. But even though Gabriel says it very, very clear, many scholars say, well, the end of the age, that's kind of 2,500 years ago, 2,200 years, it's kind of the end of the age. And like, no, not really. The end of the age is really the end of the age. Okay, verse 16. And I don't want to ever get cute or smart aleck about different people, different opinions. But my point is, it just is really difficult to dismiss the Antichrist through the lens of it fulfilled all 2,200 years ago. Gabriel says, an angel tells Gabriel, verse 16, it's all right here in Daniel 8, Gabriel, make this man understand the vision he just got, he just received? Daniel says, I was afraid, I fell on my face. And Gabriel said to me, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. Verse 19, Gabriel said, look, or pay attention. I'm making known to you what will happen in the latter time of the indignation, or the indignation against Israel. It's at the end of it. Verse 26, the vision pertains to many days in the future. So Gabriel anchors this vision's fulfillment at the end of the age, not 2,200 years ago when Antiochus, although Antiochus fulfilled a little bit of it. Paragraph C. Now, since the details of the first part of the vision related to Persia and Greece happened, I mean, they happened with such clarity, precision, and fulfillment, this gives the people of God confidence that the last part of the vision, the third part of the vision, will come to pass too. Because part one was about Persia, part two was about Greece, and this was all foretelling. It was before these things were apparent. They happened with such precision that we know that part three of the vision will come to pass as well. Top of page two. Let's just read, and we'll be really brief in the first part of this. In the third, verse 1, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, that gives us the date, 551 BC, a vision appeared to me. He says, Daniel, he identifies himself. Verse 2, I saw in the vision, and it so happened that while I was looking, that I was in Shushan, the citadel or the palace in Persia. He goes, here I am in Babylon, which is Iraq today. He goes, and I'm looking, and by the Spirit now, I'm in the palace over in another nation. That's similar to what happened to Ezekiel. He says it's in the province of Elam, which is Persia. Same geographic area, territory. He goes, I saw in the vision, I was by the main river right there in Persia. So he lays all this out, the context. Now, the interesting thing about this, that the third year of the king Belshazzar is Daniel, remember, he's in his early 70s. He's serving in the king's court. And he's in Iraq. And he has a vision that in 12 years, it happened, and it happened 12 years later, Iran was going to defeat them. That's not a very popular thing for a Jewish man to have that, to live in Iraq and say, guess what, Iran's going to defeat us. That vision would have been seen as treason. That was very perilous. That's an important part of catching the timing and the dates of this. Roman numeral 4. Let's go on and give some of the vision itself. Verse 3 and 4, he sees Persia, Iran, rising up and defeating Iraq, Babylon. Again, if we say Iran and Iraq, we get the emotion. If we say Persia and Babylon, we can lose the drama of what's really happening because the same battlefronts and conflicts are happening right now today. And there is one school of thought which really could be right, that though this was fulfilled back starting 12 years after Daniel had the vision, the same storyline will unfold again. The whole vision will unfold again at the end of the age. Now that's one school of thought on this, and I think it's got a good argument, but I'm not sure it's right, but you got to consider it. That though the vision was fulfilled in part back in Daniel's, right after Daniel's generation, yet there might be yet another fulfillment of this same conflict again. I'm not sure. But I know that you pay attention and you watch out for it. Verse 3, he goes, I lifted my eyes. Remember, he's by that river over in Persia. And I saw there by the river, it was a ram. And it's the Persian Empire. We find out later. Gabriel tells Daniel later in verse 20, it is the Persians, in essence. And this ram had two horns. And the two horns are very high. And the reason there's two horns, and I have it in the notes, Because it was two nations that came into an alliance. Media, which is the name of a nation, not just a department at IHOP. Media and Persia came into an alliance. And when they came into an alliance, they became very powerful. And they conquered Babylon or Iraq. And so Daniel says, I see these two nations. They're going to come into an alliance. And he describes it. And I have some of it on the notes. You can read on your own if you want. Verse 4. And this ram, this Persian empire, or this alliance of Media and Persia, it was pushing towards the west. Well, what's west of Iraq? I mean, what is west of Iran? Iraq. Daniel says, they're pushing towards us. And even further west is Jerusalem, because most of the directions in prophecy are always Jerusalem-centric. Or not, I don't know about always, but almost always Jerusalem-centric, so it's west of Jerusalem. But it's west of where Daniel lives as well. He goes, that ram is pushing. And no other nation could stop him. Nobody could deliver any of us out of their hands. And this ram, this leader, which was we know as Cyrus, is the leader. He became very great, very powerful. Well, I have the details of that there on the notes there. Go ahead and turn to page 3. I mean, you'll have to read this a little bit on your own, get in some discussion groups to get familiar with the ideas. But they're really not very complicated. You just got to get familiar with a few ideas, you know, where the nations are and, oh, okay. And again, I think it's possible that the storyline will unfold again. That's one school of thought. I'm not sure that's true, but I think it's something we got to be open to. I've heard the case and I went, huh, you know, let's pay attention. Okay, verse 5. Roman numeral 5 and verse 5 here. Now he's going to move on to the next part of the vision. After Persia rises up and conquers, then he says, now I saw a male goat, and it's coming from the west. And again, that's west of Persia, and it's west of Jerusalem. And this male goat, it's Greece. It's Alexander the Great, which is, you know, Greece is west of Iraq and Iran, and it's west of Jerusalem. And this male goat, this new empire, this new man, I mean, this new world leader, he's going across, this goat is going across the surface of the whole earth without even touching the ground. That's depicting the remarkable speed of military conquest. I mean, he is going so fast his feet aren't even touching the ground. And most of you know that Alexander the Great, and I have the details here in the notes, conquered in a 3 or 4 year period of time more ground than any man in history has ever conquered in that short amount of time. This goat, the Empire of Greece, had a notable one horn. A horn, often in Daniel, speaks of a leader. The little horn is the Antichrist. A horn is a leader because it's the horn of authority. Because one of the reasons is when they anointed the king, they filled a horn with oil and they put the oil from the horn on a king, and that's one of the reasons that they would associate authority with a horn. And a wild beast had power because it had powerful horns. So just in the animal kingdom, a horned beast had an advantage over one without a horn in a conflict, you know, when they attack each other. He says that this one had a notable horn, verse 6, and he, Alexander the Great, came to Persia, to the ram, and ran at him with furious power. That's exactly what Alexander the Great did. But this is a couple hundred years later. I mean, this happened exactly like Daniel said. And because we see the accuracy of this all happening in the future after Daniel's time, then it gives us confidence the rest of the vision is accurate. Of course, I have confidence in it anyway because it's in the Word of God. Paragraph B, verse 7. Daniel says, I saw him, this goat, this notable horn, who's Alexander the Great, confronting the ram. And he, Alexander, was moved with rage. I mean, he was so angry at Persia, and he was. Because he was wanting a payback against Persia, because Persia attacked Greece and brought great destruction. There was great vengeance in the Greeks against Persia. And he broke, Alexander the Great broke the two horns of the ram of Persia. He broke them. He conquered them. Paragraph C, verse 8. The male goat, Greece, grew very great. He became very strong. The empire of Greece was so powerful under Alexander the Great. And the large horn, Alexander, was broken. He suddenly died. Alexander the Great started conquering when he was age 20. He was the general, and they call him one of the greatest military geniuses of history. He died suddenly at 32. And the story is that he wept because he had no more lands to conquer. But he conquered more territory from age 20 to 32 than any other man in history up to that time. And he suddenly died. He was broken. Now here's the important part, verse 8. Here's why the angel wanted Daniel to know, and this is what you got to lock into. And in place of Alexander the Great, four notable horns replaced him. What that means, when Alexander the Great died, four of his generals divided up his vast, I mean, the biggest empire in world history up to that time. They divided it up, and they became four distinct empires. And they fought each other, actually. And you'd think they'd be friendly, because they were all fellow soldiers together, but they went to war against each other at various times. But the angel tells Daniel, there's going to be this kingdom, Greece. There's going to be one leader, Alexander the Great, we find out from history. He's going to die suddenly. The horn will be broken. And four of his generals, four of the most powerful, he had many, many generals, but four of them rose to the top and broke up the kingdom. Why do we care about that? Because we're going to find out in a minute that the Antichrist is going to come from one of those four kingdoms. And that helps us understand the Antichrist, the geographic area or the people group he comes out of. That's the point of understanding this, or that's one of the points. So that we understand where the Antichrist is emerging in the end times. That's one of the reasons, one of the ways you apply this vision. Paragraph 4, the four horns, the four generals. Seleucus is one of them. Say Seleucus. Okay, that's the one we care about. His kingdom is called the Seleucids. The Seleucid Empire was the biggest of the four. And the Seleucid Empire, which was in, really had a very strong presence in Syria, what the angel says is, one of these four kingdoms, the Antichrist is going to come out of. And the Seleucid Empire is where Antiochus, that foreshadowing, he was a descendant of this Greek empire, but he was based in Syria. And so a lot of people read this verse, and I believe rightfully so, and they think the Antichrist is going to have a direct affiliation somehow with the geographic area of Syria or the people group or the area round about. And I've got a bit more details here in the notes. I don't want to give too much detail because there's just so much ground to cover. And I want you to get broad strokes and then read the notes later, then read commentaries on it and get more familiar with it. Top of page 4. So far, the first part of the vision, Persia rises up, Iran, and defeats Iraq, Babylon. Daniel lives in Babylon. He goes, guys, we're going to be defeated pretty soon. And it happened in Daniel's lifetime. It happened 12 years after the vision. Daniel was in his 70s. It happened when Daniel was in his 80s. And Cyrus was the great leader of Persia. But Daniel said, hold your breath, because after Persia, a little bit of time will pass, another kingdom will rise up, Greece, and they'll beat Persia. Matter of fact, tradition says, or there's statements in history. I don't, you know, I've never verified them, but I've read them and heard them over the years that Alexander the Great, when he came to Jerusalem after he defeated all these nations around, they told him, I mean, he had heard the prophecies that a Jewish prophet said that he would defeat Persia and all this, and he was favorable towards Jerusalem in that particular situation. And again, I don't know how true it was, but that's I've heard the story and read it several times, they said they presented Daniel 8 to Alexander the Great, and he said, they said, Jewish prophets foretold of your supremacy. And that kind of flattered him and made him feel good. Okay, let's go to Roman numeral 6, top of page 4. The angel is continuing to give a vision to Daniel, or he's having an open vision, but angels are involved in the mediation of these visions. Now in verse 9 it says, out of one of them, out of one of who? Well, the verse we just looked at, verse 8, because now we're in verse 9. Out of one of the four generals, Seleucus is the one that history makes it clear. It's from him, the Seleucid Empire. Out of one of these four generals, and that's the reason the angel or the vision shows the breakup of the four. So it gives us, it's one of the reasons, it gives us some of the identity of where the Antichrist will come from. Out of one of them came a little horn, and this little horn grew exceedingly great. The idea, he started little, but he became great before his military and political career was over. Now, the little horn here in verse 9 is the same little horn that Daniel saw in chapter 7, because right now we're in chapter 8. But 2 years earlier, Daniel saw the vision in chapter 7, and he saw the little horn. Remember back in chapter 7 and in 7 verse 21, the little horn persecuted the saints and martyred them, killed them. And Daniel was like, why is this little horn be given power over the saints? So Daniel doesn't like this little horn. He sees him now at the second time. And just like in Daniel 7, right here in Daniel 8 verse 9, the vision says the little horn became exceedingly great. And we know that he was exceedingly cruel and violent. He was great or powerful towards the south. And there's quite a bit, there's a biblical prophecy about the Antichrist, particularly Isaiah 19, and as well as Daniel 11, of what he's going to do in Egypt. He's going to be powerful towards the east. But he will also be powerful towards Israel. And exceedingly great and powerful in this context means cruel, wicked. He will be great. He will be great in power, great in fierce attack, great in rage against the south, which is Egypt, the east, and the glorious land, which is Israel. Now, paragraph 1, a little horn, as we said back in chapter 7, a couple sessions ago, speaks of a political leader that starts off with a small sphere of authority. That's why it's called the little horn. He starts off, nobody's paying attention to him on the world stage yet. And I used the analogy a couple weeks ago of Adolf Hitler started off as an insignificant political figure that the leaders of Germany didn't pay any real attention to. They did not take him seriously at all. And then he became the mightiest leader in Europe. Well, this little horn is going to start little, insignificant, and then be powerful. Number 2, it says, out of one of them, we've already covered this, the Antichrist will come out of one of these generals, out of one of these four kingdoms or these four generals after Alexander's death. Paragraph 3, here's the key point. You want to put a little star by this if you want to get the takeaway point of this verse. The Antichrist may come out of the, because we know he's associated with it, but associated with this geographic area, does that mean he's born there? We don't know. Does that mean he has a political career there? Does that mean he went to law school there? Does that mean he was in the military there? What does that mean, that he came out of there? Well, it's left open. But we know he's going to have an association with that area. So paragraph 3, the Antichrist will come out of the geographic area or the people groups that are historically associated with the Seleucid Empire, which is Greece, but in a profound way, it's Syria as well, as with the Roman Empire, the Eastern Division. Now, the reason we care about that is that these territories include Syria, Iraq, Turkey, Jordan. These people today are Islamic. And there's a strong, people are taking a strong position that the Antichrist will be Islamic and come out of Syria or come out of that geographic area, those people groups. And I believe there's truth to that. But he may be more than Islamic. He may have his roots in Islam and his roots in Christianity and his roots in Europe and in the Middle East. All he could have his roots. He could be born and raised in one country, go to law school in another country, be in the military in another, be in political. I'm not saying he's a lawyer. Someone said, Mike Beckel prophesied. No, that's not what I mean. Pure hypothetic. He could marry into a rich family of another. They said, marry? Well, I don't know. Maybe one. I don't know any of that stuff. But my point being, he could have roots in a number of different places. Okay, look at paragraph 4. The Antichrist is, again, I'm saying this again, is foreshadowed by Antiochus, a Seleucid king based in Syria. Now, the reason this is important, and I'm making a point out of this, because once you start reading commentaries, again, a number of scholars are going to reduce the entire Daniel 8, of which Gabriel said it's for the end times, they're going to reduce it to being fulfilled 2,200 years ago when Antiochus was a king in Syria. And they're going to say, well, Antiochus was the little horn, and Antiochus fulfilled all the prophecies, and there isn't really an Antichrist, and there really isn't an end time plan in the Bible. It's all symbolic. Well, I'm going to just put a map up here. And by the way, I have about 4 or 5 maps and charts on the website. I'm going to put that map up of the Daniel 8:8 map, because I want you to see his empire. Now, do you see the 3 yellow or orange circles? Say yes. Okay, see those? Okay, good. Those are 3 of the 4 generals of Alexander. And Seleucus, the green is him. His empire was so much bigger than the other 3. He was by far the most powerful. But my point being is, Antiochus never was a little political leader. He was the most powerful political leader in the world in his day. And that was his first position. When he came into political office, he came in over that area. So he never started as a little horn. And my point, the only reason you care about that is that when you read the commentaries and you see this case that he is the little horn, you say, well, wait a second, he had the biggest empire in the world at that time. How is he the little horn? Because the energy of that position is to dismiss an end-time antichrist and make it all symbolic, and all the prophecies are still biblical and fulfilled, but they were all fulfilled 2,200 years ago. And I just don't believe that is an adequate answer to Daniel chapter 8. I don't believe Gabriel appeared in human history for the first time to talk about Antiochus. Okay, let's go on to paragraph B. Okay, we're at the bottom of page 4. Now we have a very unusual verse. We know the little horn is coming from one of the areas of these four generals, and it's the Seleucid Empire. Again, that big green area we just looked on the map. And again, on the internet, on my website, I have 4, 5, or 6 maps and charts and aids to help you kind of picture things and get the date lines. And so if you're new with Daniel and you want to get some of the easy on-ramps of the dates and the flow of the information, I encourage you to look at those, and they're all up there right now. Now, here's a very unusual concept. Daniel sees it. He says, verse 10, Daniel chapter 8, verse 10. And it, that means the little horn, that's the Antichrist, he grew up to the host of heaven. What? I've read quite a few commentaries on Daniel, and this is arguably, by many of them, called the hardest verse, the most difficult verse in the whole book of Daniel, right here, verse 10. They go, how does a man grow up? It means progress in his stature. To grow up, it doesn't mean he was 10 years old, now he's 15 years old. It means progress in his spiritual stature to where he affects the host of heaven, the heavenly realm. What man has ever affected the heavenly realm in this kind of major, dramatic, widespread way? And this man, this little horn, he will cast down some of the host. What? Again, commentators go, nobody knows what this means. Or it means exactly what it says, which is always an option we should consider. But I agree, it is a difficult verse. I don't want to pretend I grasp this verse with clarity, but I don't think we want to get so sophisticated that it doesn't mean what it says. Well, the word host means army. You know, the Lord is called the Lord of hosts. That means he's the Lord of the armies of heaven. So host and army, you can use it interchangeably many places in the Old Testament. So this man grew up, he grew in spiritual stature where he affected the army of heaven. In what sense does a man, can a man affect a heavenly or an angelic army? In what way? That he cast down the host. Heavenly beings are cast down to the earth and by the associated with the actions of this man. Well, paragraph one, it grew up. And again, his spiritual stature continued to increase until. That's what he affected this. That some see this. I think this is a reasonable explanation, though I'm not sure. I want to be cautious on all this. I want to say there's a couple positions on this, and no one seems quite sure on it one way or the other, because we just got to be tentative. But this man grew up and affected the armies of the heavenly realm, the host of heaven. So we see the Antichrist is creating a chain reaction in the spirit realm. That's a quote unquote. That's not a, I don't know how else to say it. That will affect the host of heaven, which means, which the one interpretation is he will affect demonic angels, demons or fallen angels. You know, the demons are called angels in the Bible. Now, Revelation chapter 12, John the Apostle, and you know the book of Revelation, the book of Daniel are companion books. You've got to read them together. Many of the points that are given to Daniel are elaborated and completed. The thoughts are elaborated on in the book of Revelation. If you read one without the other, you're not going to get the complete picture. But it's interesting that Daniel 12, verse 7 to 9, it has very similar language Revelation 12, 7 to 9 has very similar language to Daniel chapter 8, verse 10, the verse we're looking at. Look what John saw. Let's look down in verse 7. John saw a war broke out in the heavenly realm. Michael the archangel is fighting the devil. And if you read the whole passage, and all of the demons associated with Satan. And the devil, verse 9, was cast to the earth, because we know the powers and principalities, demonic, are in the heavenly realm. They're in that mid-heavens realm. They're thrown down and cast to the earth in a war of which Michael the archangel and all of his angels are in a battle. It's that Daniel 10, you know, when Daniel prayed and fasted and the angel Michael broke in and the prince of Persia was pushed out of, he broke in. I won't go through all that right now. But the point being, I believe there is an end time conflict coming described in Revelation 12. I believe Revelation 12 is yet future. And the demonic host are going to be cast down to the ground. And it's going to have, according to Daniel chapter 8, verse 10, the verse we're looking at, it's going to have some association and affiliation with the little horn, with what the Antichrist does. Now that's a bizarre to our natural mind idea. That the demonic realm in the heavenlies will actually be cast down to the earth. And that creates an open heaven for the church. There's no hindrance. But that creates a rage of demonic activity against the people of God on the earth. So there's a greater open heaven, but there's a greater physical conflict on the earth. You know, that's the implication, seemingly, of these events. Let's go to page 5. Now, Daniel 8's one of those visions you got to read a couple times to get. But it's worth it because, again, it's Gabriel's first visit in history. And he's preparing the people of God for the glory and the trauma of that time frame in history. Verse 11. Let's go down to paragraph C, towards the end of page 5. Verse 11, and he, that's the little horn, the Antichrist, that's the one who threw the host of heaven to the ground in the verse before, that's the he. This man exalted himself as high as the prince of the armies of heaven. That's Jesus. In other words, this man claimed to be God. And by him, he removed the daily sacrifices. Because what the storyline, the narrative is, the Antichrist will present himself as a man of peace on the front end. He'll make peace in the Middle East. And part of the bargaining of peace in the Middle East is he allows the Jews to rebuild their temple. That's yet future. That's not happened yet. The Jews want to build the temple. But there's going to be a man against all odds that will bring peace in the Middle East. And part of the deal is he lets the Jews build the temple. And part of the deal also is they get to reenact re-engage and do the sacrifices from the Old Testament days in that temple. And it's really important to the Jewish, the radical rabbinic community there. The temple's built. The sacrifices are happening because to them, that means now the Messiah will come. So to the conservative, devout Jews, this is really big to have the sacrifices offering because that's related to their Messiah coming. Well, this man, he allows the temple to be built, allows the daily sacrifice to start, but somewhere in the process, we're going to break it down more in the future, in the visions here, in the future classes. He stops the daily sacrifices, which is paramount to saying you can't do the temple activities, which to the devout Jews, that means your Messiah is not coming back. He's interfering with that conviction of theirs. This is really big when he stops the daily sacrifices. Verse 12. But because of sin, transgression, put the word sin there, an army will be given over to the Antichrist. In the economy of God and the sovereignty of God, because of sin of Jews and sin of Gentiles, God will allow the Antichrist to have access to a huge military force. And he will use this army. It will be given over to the horn, the Antichrist. And he will use this army, he'll use military power to oppose, to stop the daily sacrifices that it was him that allowed them to start it just some time earlier. And notice it says that this man casts truth down to the ground. That is one of the primary things the Antichrist will do, cast truth down to the ground. You know, over the last months I've been talking about Psalm 2, how the kings of the earth, and I have this in the notes, the kings of the earth are going to gather together in order to drive the influence of the Word of God completely out of the culture. Well, when the Antichrist, the little horn, comes into world power, his goal is to cast truth down to the ground. There is no truth about Jesus that is allowed to be openly declared. There is no morality, the kingdom morality. It's all open. There's murder and immorality and occult activity. He flings truth to the ground, one translation says. But the most confusing thing at the end of verse 12, he did all this and he prospered. So believers who are not equipped with the knowledge of what's happening, because he only prospers for 3.5 years, but believers who don't know this, they're very confused by the prosperity of this man. And there'll be a lot of believers that will actually deny the faith and go with him. They'll say, the favor of God's on him. And this man will have a temporary success. And so people will say, hey, there's a momentum. It must be good. They're going to join in with him. But it's only a 3.5 year prosperity. It will confuse some of the believers. And it will embolden the wicked with confidence to really go wholehearted. They'll say everything he touches turns to gold. But what they don't know is his prosperity only lasts 3.5 years. Then he's suddenly destroyed. Top of page 6. Let's go down to the middle, paragraph D. So the vision has been going on from verse 3 to 12. He's seen all this vision of first Persia, then Greece, and then this little horn that shows up out of one of the four divisions of the breakup of the Grecian Empire. So verses 3 to 12 is telling all this. And so now, the vision's over. In verse 13, or the information, I don't know that the vision's over, but I'd rather say it this way. The angels are now engaging with him and speaking to Daniel. I heard one angel speaking to another angel. He hears an angelic conversation. One angel tells the other angel, how long will the vision be? How long will this resistance against the Jewish people and the Jewish temple, the religious observances of the devout Jews, how long will this happen? How long will this man use his military force, the army that's been given over to him, to stop the daily sacrifices? And how long will the transgression of desolation take place? How long will the sanctuary be trampled underfoot? How long will the host be trampled underfoot? So he asks, one angel asks another angel this question. Now this is verse 13 here. It says the transgression of desolation, right in the middle of verse 13. That's the first reference to the abomination of desolation. It's just called the transgression that leads to desolation. The other places it's called the abomination of desolation, but that's the first appearance of the phrase, the abomination of desolation, right here in this verse. Verse 14, then the angel answers back, this whole period of time where the sacrifices are resisted and somehow interrupted partially, to the full persecution of the abomination of desolation, to the trampling down of the sanctuary, to the hindering of the sanctuary, to its full trampling down, there will be a 2,300-day time frame. 2,300 days. That's a little bit like 6 years and 3 months time frame. A 6-year, 3-month time frame. They think, what? What is this 6-year, 3-month time frame? One angel asks the other, how long does the whole scenario from the initial resistance against the Jews in Jerusalem to the full-on persecution to the end of it? How long will this period go on? 2,300 days, which is approximately 6 years and 3 months. And so Daniel's going, what am I going to do with that? And Daniel can't interpret this for another 15 years. And what I mean by that is look at paragraph 3. Paragraph 3 on page 6. It's 15 years later when an angel appears in Daniel's final vision, where he gets the idea that there's 1290 days after the abomination of desolation. Now, if this is new to you, I want to encourage you. There's about five or six time frames, five or six in dates, at the most, four, five, or six. I think it's five or six. Let's go with that. You get those time frames clear, and they are really easy to get clear, but if you're not familiar with them, it's all confusing. But you get those four, five, or six time frames clear, and I've got them all clearly laid out on a chart. I'm going to put that chart up if you would. But if you'll look at, if you'll just get five or six of these time frames clear, get familiar with them, you can go back and read this vision, and I think it won't be so confusing like it is if it's the very first time. But I'll say it for those of you that have studied Daniel a little bit, and the others of you that haven't, you're going, what on earth did you just say? What Daniel finds out is that from the abomination of desolation forward, there's 43 months, 1,290 days. But what he finds out here in Daniel 8 is if he goes back 2,300 days from that 43rd month after the abomination of desolation, go back 2,300 days, something is going to happen that's going to be a sign of the times. Now, I didn't expect you, if you just are brand new at Daniel, to even grasp what I just said to you. What? But I think that if you'll look at this chart I have on here, not right now, it's on the internet, and you can take it. It'd take you probably 20 minutes to grasp the five or six time frames. And I think it's clear enough. It's just, you go, oh, okay, that's not so confusing. But if it's brand new to you and you're not familiar with the five or six dates, you're not even aware what I'm talking about. But here's the point. I'm going to end with this, and then we'll have a Q&A time. Because I have the details written down here on the next page or two of the notes. Here's the real point. Is that it boils down to this. Let's go down to top of page 7, the 2,300 days. I'm just going to take 1 minute. Because again, you're going to have to get familiar with the five or six dates, but don't be intimidated by it. It's not so hard. It really isn't. If you'll take that little chart we have there, look at the dates, and don't believe anything you can't see in the Bible with your own eyes in your own Bible. Like, don't just take my word for it. See it with your own eyes in the Scripture. But once you get familiar with the ideas, then you can think about it, you know, objectively without just being the fog of, like, this is too much new information, I don't get it. Here's why it matters. And again, the next session, Gabriel comes on the scene and interprets all of this. His first appearance in human history in terms of the biblical record. But here's the point. Bottom line, top of page 7. Let me see, where is it at? Number 7, top of page 7, number 7. What's going to happen is 9 months into the final 7-year period, right? There's a final 7-year period the Bible, Daniel talks about in Daniel 9. There's a 7-year period. In the middle of the 7-year period is the abomination of desolation. That's when the Antichrist pulls off his mask, and he's not a man of peace. He is a man of war. He's an evil man, and he's unashamedly evil in the middle of that 7-year period. There's no facade. The first 3.5 years of that 7-year period, he shows himself to the world as a man of peace. He introduces himself as committed to Israel. He's committed to Islam. He's committed to Israel. He's committed to the Middle East. He's going to somehow make everybody believe he's committed to their cause, and he's going to come up with a compromise that everybody agrees with. I don't know what it will be. But he's going to show himself as a friend of Israel at the beginning of that 7-year period. It was like, hey, things are going to go great. 9 months into that 7-year period. I mean, it's not the middle time yet. It's not the abomination of desolation when he's openly hostile to Israel. But 9 months into the time frame when he showed himself as a friend of Israel, he's going to show that he's betraying Israel. We don't know what it is. That's what this 2,300 days is about. And as you read the page or two, I think you'll be able to follow it. when you put it with the chart, what the angel is telling Daniel is, before the Antichrist is openly, boldly hostile to Israel and shows himself as an evil man, he's going to first give a hint of betrayal. I believe it'll be a religious betrayal. He will do something that maybe the world won't be troubled by, but Israel and the prophetic church will say, this man is not a man of peace. He is violating his commitment and promises to Israel. Maybe the rest of the world will say, it's not a big deal. He's just interrupting a little bit of the daily sacrifices. I mean, the Jews got the Messiah coming back. It's not real. They'll be fine. But somewhere 9 months into that final 7-year period, he's going to give the first sign of his betrayal. He's going to openly persecute them at the 3.5-year mark, but 9 months into it. And here's the reason we care about this. Because when this man comes on the world scene, the man of peace, nations are going to rejoice. The prophetic church is going to say, no, that man's Satan incarnate, or all but. They're going to say, what are you talking about? Finally, a man has world peace, and you say he's of the devil. Yes. And how do you figure he's of the devil? Well, it's in the Bible, book of Daniel. They'll really like a ram came against a goat, and the four horns, the horns broke, and he rose up to the host of heaven and trampled. What? No, he is troublesome. And many of the nations will not buy it. But the prophetic church will say, wait, 9 months from now, he will betray Israel. It won't be the open, full hostility that's going to happen at the abomination of desolation, but you wait and see. They'll say, that's not a chance. Well, 9 months later, he will betray Israel, the beginning of betrayal. And, you know, the neighbor will come over to that prophetic believer and say, how did you know that was going to happen? Say, well, I'll tell you, something far worse is going to happen. Because in 33 months from now, and I got it all written down on the chart, he's going to pull off his mask and make the whole world worship him, or he'll kill him. They'll say, you're crazy. Well, I was right about this 9 month thing, so maybe I'm right about the other thing, the prophetic believer will say. And then when the Antichrist pulls off his mask and shows himself as this evil man that's demanding at the pain of death for the whole world to worship him, the fact that it was all declared ahead of time and prophetic believers even grasped it and understood it before it actually happened will give tremendous credibility, and it will give wisdom that there's a plan that's sovereignly unfolding that God has total control over. Now, again, I didn't expect you to follow that 2,300 days yet, but what I hoped is that I stirred up your appetite for you to read these 2 or 3 pages and to get with a few folks and say, I'm going to check this thing out. Because, you may not see that in your lifetime. You might. But your children or their children might. And yeah, it's time for the church to understand what the angel said in Daniel chapter 8. It's time to grasp the weightiness of what Gabriel was communicating to Daniel about that time frame in history. Because to most believers, they love the word of God. Daniel 8 is, well, who knows? That stuff is just for people who read that stuff. Well, that stuff's important. And it will show itself to be important in that day. And again, you may or may not see it in your day. But it's not too early to start training the church about these prophecies and visions and dust them off and take them out of antiquity. It's like, well, that's something they did back in the old days. No, we need to know what these visions are about. Amen and amen. Well, I'm going to have Dave and Wes come on up. And these guys are like real.